Basel, Mishus Rosh Hashiva, Mashkichim, Abayim. He gave me the job to be the closer on the whole phone situation here. So I'm going to try to close it as best as I can. And I hear that you guys learned the whole Sunday, Super Bowl. This yeshiva is amazing. I feel like everyone knows that New England's going to win. That's probably why you're not watching it, whatever it is. But I hate that guy. But you know what? I have to tell you something that, for the sports fans over here, I had a cheshbon. The cheshbon didn't work, because you always have a cheshbon. But lahavdil, and it shouldn't be chas v'shalom atayna on Klal Yisrael. So anyone here from Minnesota? Have any boys from Minnesota? Nobody. Smart. Okay. Anyway, so it's really cold there. So when Minnesota won, you probably don't know anything I'm talking about because you guys are sitting and learning, but there was like 10 seconds left in the game and they were losing, and this guy threw the ball and this black guy caught it, and he went up really high to catch it, and then the two defenders banged into each other, and you saw your mama, if this Yad Hashem in football, and he scored a touchdown and he didn't know what hit him. Because they had lost the game, right? They were sure that they lost. And he's in the end zone, and the reporter, this woman reporter, runs up to him and says, "That was an amazing catch. I mean, what do you have to say?" He says, "It was God, man. It was God. I don't even know what I did. God did it." And I'm watching this clip. One of my boys in my chabura showed it. He says, "Rebbe, listen to this guy." And the guy goes, and she's trying to get like football stuff out of him, and he keeps going, "It's God, man. It's all God." And then he says, "You know, sometimes God gives you a chance. And you just got to take that chance and run with it." I'm listening to a Muslim shmooze from a football player. And I said, "Chas v'shalom, it shouldn't be a kitrug on Klal Yisrael that a football player, and no matter how, any question they asked him, like, how'd you beat the defender?" And he said, no, I did nothing. And I guess he was a very religious person. And I said, "Shouldn't be a kitrug on Klal Yisrael, because like, was the last time that a guy hit a three with 2 seconds left on the court, you win the game, and you're like, God did it, it wasn't me," right? How many times do we do that when we play football, that we say God did it? So what I thought about it was that all the kids that were Jewish kids that were watching football, was a message Hashem was giving to them through him. Many times through Goyim say something, and it's not about them. It's really a message to us. So I had figured that after this guy made that catch, because you know, you always think you can figure out how Hashem works. There's no question that after such a kiddush Hashem, right? Minnesota's going to win the next game. They're going to go to the Super Bowl. Imagine at the end of the Super Bowl, the shear this guy's going to give. Right? That they won the Super Bowl and they beat New England. Forget about it, right? No. It was a message to the kids that were watching that game. And Hashem only had to send that message through this person. Many times that's the way that he sends a shliach. And it had nothing to do with them winning and going further, going anywhere. It was a message to us to realize that everything that happens, that even a football player, not a guy who's sitting in yeshiva, but a football player, right, can stand there for 5 minutes and talk about that's all from Hashem. So Allah has kama v'kama, all of us have to realize that everything that happens is Yad Hashem. Just to jump on that for a second. So 2 weeks ago, someone that I know very well, his name is William Aboud. He's a Persian from Great Neck. Any Persians from Great Neck here? I had a feeling nobody would raise their hand. Okay. Anyway, so William Aboud and me, we became very close because he owned a company called FXCM. FXCM was the biggest platform on Wall Street for trading funds. In other words, if you wanted to go on your computer and you wanted to buy the English pound, right, the mark, the Russian ruble, you wanted to buy, you wanted to trade, you could do it by going online. There was a platform called FXCM, and they were making hundreds of millions of dollars. It was an amazing, amazing place. How did I find out about the place? They were giving a lot of charity, and I went up there to see if I could get some money for my high school, for my girls. And I met this guy, Eddie, who wasn't religious. He was from Queens, a Bukharian, and I sat down with him, and I was very fascinated because on this floor there were at least 1,000 traders. It was like a whole building, and all these computers, when buying is green and selling is red, and everything's flashing, and there's hundreds of billions of dollars trading on this floor from all over the world. It was like mind-boggling. And then you have a whole set of like 500 people that are doing the funds. It was something. So I sat down with Eddie, and he's like the computer brain, and he was telling me not from, and he was telling me his story, and he told me that he had come from. He had escaped, actually, from Bukhari or whatever it is, and he came without anything with his mother, just him and his mother, and he was a taxi driver, young, 20-year-old taxi driver. And he was hooked up with one of these guys who was trading funds at that time, much smaller, because at that time it wasn't computerized that much, and he used to take this man home every single day, and he would pick him up every single day from this huge mansion in Saddle River, right, and he didn't even speak English really, Eddie, and he would listen to this man on the phone talking about what he does, and he found it very interesting. And after months and months, when he started to learn a little English, he asked him to explain to him what he's listening to, and this went on for like a year and a half. Taxi driver, that's all he was, like one of those limousine XYZ taxis, and he's learning the business from the guy in the back of the. In the back seat, and they become very friendly, whatever it is. Anyway, he's a very smart guy, and Hashem put together these three other partners that were from. One was from Great Neck, and one was from Muncie, and this William Aboud. And these guys were making hundreds of millions of dollars. And they were giving tzedakah, building buildings, they were doing stuff. They gave tzedakah to everybody, to the Persians, to the Bukharian community, to everybody. FXCM, very famous place to go to raise money. So, one morning, about a year and a half ago, the monetary rules in England and Europe, because of that whole Brexit, that whole business, whatever it was, because that happened, when Brexit happened, so the everyone who owned English money wanted to get out of that market because they felt that since they separated from the euro, that it's going to go down. So in one morning, the whole world was selling the English sterling. FXCM didn't have the money backing them because this was something that nobody expected. They didn't have the money backing them to give the people who were selling. So as they're selling, the market's going down. To make a long story short, they stopped the trading in FXCM. It was on the market. And they went bankrupt in 10 minutes. They lost everything. The whole platform collapsed because they couldn't back. There was like a run on the bank. So there was a run on their company. Stock went from wherever it was to zero. They closed it down because they weren't backed up anymore. You have to have a certain amount of money behind you. Closed, finished, and they almost all went to jail because they didn't have the money to. Whatever happened. Finished. No one's there. There's no traders. It's illegal to trade with FXCM in America. Done, finished in one moment. So that happened about a year and a half ago. You can go online. FX, no, you can't go online. But you could ask someone in New York maybe to go for you and look up FXCM. Finish. Have a nice day. So William Aboud, this most amazing man who's about tshuva, who left Persia, went through the border, snuck out, came to America with nothing. The clothes on his back and that's it. Became a multi-millionaire. Became about tshuva. Very, very firm man. I said to him, because I like to understand people, I said, how do you deal with God? I mean, you gave so much tzedakah. You guys helped so many people. You were a legal business. You weren't doing anything illegal. And in one moment, Hashem wiped you out. I need to know, how do you deal with God after such a situation? Because I need to understand so I could tell other people. When something so tragic happens in one moment, you have to understand, he woke up in the morning, his phone was ringing, and they said, you need to come down to the office They're closing us down. The SEC is closing us down. He said, what are you talking about last night? What? From one moment, from one night to one morning. So this is what he tells me. He says that many years ago, when he first learned about trading funds, he was working in a very, very small company where they had one table and 30 traders around the table. And the guy next to him was a guy on his right-hand side. And for 5 years, the two of them worked together, all the traders. So he had the ruble, he needed the ruble, they were all trading this, but it was a small, an office this size, the room, this size of the room, and it was a small company. And then one day, the guy on his right got a call from a huge company on Wall Street who said, we heard you guys trade funds, we heard you're the man, we want you to hire as many people as you need, and we want to become the biggest company in the world when it comes to trading funds. We want you to put the team together. The guy on his right, who was a very close friend of his for 5 years. So, William figured, right, this is way before FXCM. William figured he's his buddy. He's going to hire him. And the company said, whatever they want to be paid, you pay them. We want to knock out everybody. We want to be the company that trades money. So, he's sure he was making whatever he was making. At that time, he's going to get triple, four times the amount of money. And the guy next to him hires a lady across. Another guy across. Another guy. Out of the 30 traders, this guy on his right hired 15 of them to put together his team, and he left William out. And these two were the best of friends. And William felt that, okay, I'm going to be the last guy. He's going to hire me. And I'm going to be the closer. And I'm going to get all the money. And they get a message. The team is finished. The team is closed. They don't need anyone else. He said, Rabbi Wallerstein, I was a Baal Tshuva. This was my chance. I was just making a salary at that time. So my chance to make it huge. And this guy who was my best friend, I'm on his right. I was on his left hand. I was on his left hand. He was to my right. Hashem, how could you do this to me? I want to give tzedakah. I want to do the right thing. And the guy hired everyone else. He said, for 6 months, I didn't daven. So for 6 months, I was like, I couldn't connect the dots. He said, I could not connect the dots. A year and a half later, after this team was put together, the first plane hit the World Trade Center on the 98th floor. On the 98th floor was a company called Fitzgerald. That day, they lost 750 people. They were the biggest resident of the World Trade Center. The trading floor that they created for the trading of funds was the 98th floor. Every single person, all 15, they were all his friends, he said, because we were sat there every day together from the beginning to the end of the training. Every single one of them died at impact. Had he chosen me, I would have died with them. But Wallerstein, my children and my family happened after 9/11. I would have had no children. I would have had no family. There would have been nothing left of me. So now you want to ask me a question on how do I deal with God when I wake up in the morning and my company is gone? He said, I don't need to deal. Every day since 9/11 is a day that I shouldn't be here. So if I have FXCM or I don't have FXCM, the day is a present. I don't have a problem with God at all. A person needs to know that no matter what happens in your life, this is just one story where you get to see the ending. Now he's in real estate, he's struggling, he's trying, whatever it is, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He said, every single person has a 9/11 every single night when you go to sleep. Who says you're going to wake up? Who says you're going to live through the day? Every single day, There are people that are dying. There are people that are sick. There are people that are in the hospital. And you're not. And you're in yeshiva. And you're sitting and learning. Every single day is a 9/11 that you were not in the building when the plane crashed into the building. He says, and that's how a person has to live their life. Why am I telling you this story? Because the discussion that we're having today is technology. The Rosh Yeshiva is willing to pay money to sell your phones, to pay $500, that you should step out of a world, a man-made world that is designed by the Satan to suck away the most important thing that we have. And I'm not talking today about Yiddishkeit. Yeah, I could get up and talk about porn, and I could talk about talking to girls, and I could talk about, that's not my subject today. I don't need to tell you that. Every guy in this room knows what's on the internet. I don't need to tell you that. You don't need Rav Wallstein to tell you that. But what it's really doing is it's taking away, boys, the most precious thing that you have. And because you're young, and Hashem should give you long lives, because you're young, you don't look at the consequence. You look at, I'm very young. I'm not going to die. Nothing's going to happen to me. I got 70, 80 years, at least 70, 80 years ahead of me, for sure. So the consequence is not in front of me. I'll change later on. We don't know. We don't know what we have. We don't know what the next day brings. Every day is a celebration of time that Kosh Baruch Hu gives us time that you can sit here and learn. The internet and the phones is here to suck away your time. Every kid that I ever got to go off their iPhones and go to a regular phone, they didn't tell me they became frumma. They didn't say, since I did that, I became so much more religious. He said, Rabbi Wallstein, you saved my life. I'm like, what did I do? He says, I'm living. I'm not stuck to a piece of metal. It has, guys, at the end of the day, it has no life. It has no life. It doesn't love you. It doesn't care about you. It will not help you. It's a piece of metal. That's all it is. And it's a waste of time. WhatsApp, 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 WhatsApp. What you did. You went to the bathroom. You didn't go to the bathroom. She went to the bathroom. This one did that. You're combing your hair. You're brushing your hair. You're taking a shower. Well, who, what? Who cares? A picture of this. Selfies. The most stupid thing that a human being can do. Take a picture of themselves. You go to the zoo and the animals are like, what are they doing? They're all walking around taking pictures of themselves. What is wrong with them? Look in the mirror in the morning. You know what you look like and have a good day. A whole day long. Then they have those sticks that stretch out that you can take a picture of yourself. Rachmana litzlan. It's crazy. I was by the coast yesterday. Crazy. Girls and guys are taking pictures of themselves. Well, maybe of each other. I don't know what they were doing, but taking pictures of themselves. What are you taking a picture of yourself for? You're so full of yourself? Could you believe that Rabbi Wallstein grew up, never had a picture of himself? Bar mitzvah picture and a wedding picture. Who had a picture? A million pictures. Making faces. We're meshuggah. We're out of our minds. You know, making faces and fingers and hands. What is that? You know Rabbi Gamliel very well, right? So people always ask him, Rabbi Gamliel, can I take a picture of you? He goes, I'm not worried about your picture. I'm worried about their picture. So in Shemayim, they're taking a picture of you taking a picture of yourself. The angels must be laughing their wings off. So the Rabbi Senter wants to give you your life back. That's all he wants to do. He wants to give you your life back, boys. I'm not even talking about the Yiddish car. Yiddish point of view, you want to see something you're not supposed to look at, you go buy a magazine. It's not, the phone is not going to stop that. If a person wants to see something they want to see. That's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about life. You have time, you're not on your phone. You can help a little kid. I speak about this all the time, but guys don't run with it. Help a little kid. Do you understand? To give a kid an hour, a guy for that, what you went through in your life, you didn't get the attention, you didn't get the help in school, you didn't do well in school, and this guy comes around, this cool center guy, right, ball player or not a ball player, whatever he is, and this little seven-year-old boy who's struggling in class, nobody likes him, nobody talks to him, his parents are dysfunctional, and they're always yelling at him, and you show up, and you take him out to play ball, and you take him out to eat, and you sit and learn with him for a half an hour, you can save his life. You're going to save his life. You're going to do for him what no one did for you. I'm talking about a half an hour a week. Could you imagine if you do more than a half an hour a week? You're going to save someone's life. Instead of that, what are you doing? You're WhatsApping your pictures of yourself and other things and stupidities. That's what you're doing with your time. And I understand you're very young. So you're like, okay, I have plenty of time. No one knows how much time they have. My father tonight is his yard site. When he was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, I was with him. And he was sitting in the doctor's office, and esophageal cancer is a very tough cancer because you can't really do surgery. You can't take someone's esophagus out. So the doctor says to my father, I'm really sorry, we did an endoscopy and we found, and it came back that you have cancer. He says, you want me to be blunt and honest? My father's like, that's the way I live my life. He says, Mr. Wallerstein, you have 3 months. I was sitting next to him. Can you imagine a person's told you have 3 months to live, right? My father said, can you guarantee that? He said, what? He said, you can guarantee me right now sitting here that I'm going to live for another 3 months? He says, us Jews, every second, we don't have, nobody can ever guarantee another person. You sure? I'm sitting there, I'm like, Dad, he's not going to understand you. Who can walk into this room and say, I guarantee you, you're going to live for 3 months? Nobody. Nobody. It's up to Hashem. We don't know. My father's like, wow. Big news. 3 months. He should be in Gan Eden next to the Shekhinah. That's who he was. He's like, you can't guarantee me 3 months. You can't guarantee me 3 minutes. This guy wasn't a Jewish doctor or whatever it is. He looked at my father. He goes, I never met someone like you. I said, no, and you're not about to. That's for sure. 3 months. 3 months. You could do in 3 months. That's what that phone is. It's a piece of garbage. It really is. I'm talking to you from, first of all, from experience and just watching. Just go outside, go to the Kaisel, just watch the amount of time that people spend. Forget about the phone at the Kaisel. A person spends on a phone a whole day. All they do is they're looking and they're texting and they're looking and they're texting and they're WhatsApping and they're Instagramming. And then, you know, they figured out Instagram, your parents, it disappears. So your parents can't really get to look at what you were doing, right? So they came up with this big, big thing, right? And it's a whole day. And the Yetzer Hara's come up with new stuff. A new Apple! The number 10X. And everyone, all the mishugam, like a bunch of sheep being led to slaughter, they go to the Apple store. How much more is it? $1,700, whatever it is. Wow. It's all glass. Wow. It has no border. It's all glass. I'll pay $500 more for all glass. Mishugana. The Apple mishugana. They're sitting there in the office somewhere in Apple, and they're like, what a bunch of jerks. Every year we come up with something new. It's really the same phone as the original one, right? Oh, it has face. It can recognize your face. That's great. So you see that? It's such a smart phone. You don't have to take selfies. Your phone knows what you look like. That's what it's about. It's about time. Your Rebbe shouldn't give you $500. You should give him $500. And one day you're going to want to buy back. You're going to want to give him back the $500. I had a story with a boy that was so off the derech, who was not normal, and he was very, very poor. He had no money, and I said to him that if you put on tefillin for 4 weeks straight, I'll give you $1,000. For him, $1,000 was totally like over the top. But I'm telling you right now, the one day when you're from, you're going to come back to me and you're going to want to buy back those 4 weeks of tefillin. Do you know what 4 weeks of tefillin is worth? I got a crazy deal. I paid $1,000 to get the schus of a guy wearing tefillin for 4 weeks. It's worth a trillion? A number that doesn't exist? I said, one day you're going to change, you're going to become from, you're going to want to buy back. Ray Wallstein, can you give me back those 4 weeks of tefillin? It's going to cost you 10 grand. Told to him on the spot, it's going to cost you 10 grand. I'm a businessman. He said, it ain't going to happen. It's already 3 years that he bothers me every single year. I'll give you 10 grand, give me my 4 weeks back. I'm like, no. No, I decided the price went up. I'm like, I'm not giving it back to you. So what he doesn't know is that I gave it back to him without any money. On Yom Kippur, I said to Hashem, he's one of my boys. He's got, Baruch Hashem, three kids. He doesn't miss minyan. He's stock like anything because I fooled him. I knew that tefillin, when you wear tefillin, it has a certain effect on your neshama. It's like a neshama that's so deep in such a bad place. Tefillin, mamash, breaks a light into a person's neshama. So I knew if I get him to wear tefillin for 4 weeks, something's going to happen. And it did. I can't say it always happens, right? I don't know. Lubavitch puts on a lot of tefillin. I don't know. No, seriously, I don't know what happens to all the people. But I can tell you that person who put on tefillin once, because I'm the Lubavitch guy, put on tefillin in the airport on him, he's going to come to Shemayim at the end of his life, right? He's going to have one mitzvah tefillin. You have no idea what's going to be the reward in the next world. Tefillin is ois. It's an ois. It's representative. It's a sign that you're a Jew. So one day you're all going to come back here and you're going to want to give your Rebbe, Rosh Hashiva, and Mashkichim the $500 back. Don't give it back. Take $5,000. You'll see what it means to live outside that world and living in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. Hashem created the most magnificent world. I'm in the middle of a Sefer, which I have never read a Sefer like this in my life. It just came out. Rabbi Katz, whatever it is. I just got the Sefer. I just started it. He asks every question that we ask in this day and age. It's amazing. Why Hashem created the world? We say for Chesed, a king without followers is not a king. But that means that Hashem needs us. And Hashem doesn't need anything. So he doesn't need anything. And he goes into the whole thing. Why did Hashem create the world? And if he created a world, why didn't he create a ruchniyistic world? Why a gashmiyistic world where we could fall into such a bad place? And it's very, very deep. But at the end of the day, he goes through the bria of the world and he explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world for the neshamas, which is really part of him. We are part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? For the neshamas, that they should be in a place that is so beautiful and that there's so much hana that only it's a different hana than a spiritual hana. It's a physical hana. And that we could live in the and make a bracha on a flower and make a bracha on a fruit and have a Shabbos in this world, not only in the other world. He said his answer was that it came to a point where in Shemayim, the neshamas, our neshamas were in Shemayim, but we weren't earning it. He says a person that works and gets something is on a much higher level, has a much bigger appreciation than a person that doesn't work, that gets it for free. So the neshamas in Shemayim, who on this level, wanted to earn their place in Shemayim. And that was one of the reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. So he created a crazy world, a not normal world. The sense of smell and the sense of taste and the ability to see and to hear and to feel and the different things that he created in this world, the different flowers, and the different smells and different tastes. It doesn't make any sense. I'm always in front of my house, I planted lemongrass, which is something that you can make a tea out of, and peppermint. And I have it growing in front of my house. And every single day when I leave my house, I thank Hashem for all five senses. I kiss the mezuzah. I say, thank you, Hashem, I could feel. Chas v'shalom, a person who gets a stroke who can't feel, I could feel. It's an amazing thing that you could feel. Because if you close your eyes, right, you know by your fingers that this is a book and that there's paper and you know hot and cold and you know shape and you know soft and hard. It's like the tips of your fingers are computers. They're mamish wired to your head. This is a cup and there's something shaking in here. Must be a fluid. Your fingers are not normal. The sense of touch is not normal. To feel velvet and the different hard wood and metal, all the different feelings. There's a million feelings in everyone's fingertips. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us that sense to be able to feel chas v'shalom, somebody not being able to feel. So I thank Hashem, I kiss the mezuzah, and right now it's pretty freezing. It's a metal, silver mezuzah, and in the summer it's pretty hot. Then I'm like, wow, it got cold, it got hot. I don't even need to go outside. I just put my hand out there, and I know the difference. And I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. I take a smell. I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you that I could smell, because if you ate, if you had a stuffed nose, you had a sinus infection, and you try to eat an apple, you will not taste the apple. If you cannot smell, you cannot taste. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I could smell part of the, what would I say, that you want to eat something, right? That you smell it first. If you smell it, you smell a good coffee. It's like, wow, Rabbi Miller used to talk about the smell of coffee. Smell of coffee in the morning, right? It gives you the thing to... if you couldn't smell the coffee, you wouldn't taste the coffee. The sense of smell and something that doesn't smell good, like milk, right? Even though the date is good, if you smell the milk and it smells sour, you don't drink it. And if there's something on the floor where you're walking and you smell it, you go around it. So the sense of smell is amazing. Well, I planted these things, so every single morning I go outside, I squash the mint thing, and I say, make a bracha every single morning. Thank you that I could smell. Thank you that I could feel. Thank you that I could taste. Imagine if you couldn't taste. You'd be like the nachash. Everything tastes like dust. You taste sour. You taste sweet. You taste sharp. You don't think. No one thinks about this when you eat something, right? Sweet, sour. Some guys like stuff that's kharif, right? Sfardim like things that are kharif. Your tongue is doing a million different things. It's tasting everything. And if you go to a good restaurant and it's a good chef, the beginning is this, and how's the end of the meal? How's the end of the taste? And guys who drink wine, right? All my good friends who think they know anything about wine because it's $145. I was in a wine store the other day. I don't know what happened to the Jewish nation. The guy's like, yeah, I leave it there. I let it breathe from right Friday morning. So Friday night, it has the right taste. I'm like, what do you know? Like, what are you showing off in the wine store? You let it breathe? You know anything about breathing, right? What do we know? But okay, all of a sudden we all became big wine connoisseurs. But the whole godless of wine, what's the godless of a good wine? Is that the beginning, right, has a different taste than the end on your palate. So your tongue, it's all about food. The whole value of the food is that you could taste it. Because Baruch Hu, thank you, you gave me the ability to taste. Imagine in a world where there is no taste, where there is no smell. And then, Kosh Baruch Hu, thank you, you gave me the ability to hear. I cannot understand a person who cannot hear, who lives in a world of no sound, of no music, of no footsteps, of no laughing and no crying. Baruch Hashem, today they have the cochlear implants, it got a lot better. But to live in a world where you can't hear anything, Kosh Baruch Hu, thank you that I could hear music, nice Jewish music, right? I could hear my Rebbe, I can hear my children, I can hear my wife, I can hear song. It's amazing. And then I open my eyes. I'm like, God forbid to live in a world of darkness. Thank you, Hashem, that I can see. And I do two eyes. I do one eye at a time. Why? Because there's a guy that daven to me in Shomer Shabbos who has a glass eye. He only has one eye. And he let me know about that. Because he heard one of my speeches and he said, eyes? Even if you have one eye, he says, Baruch Hashem, I have one eye, I can see. But you know, when you have one eye, you don't have peripheral vision. Try to walk around with one eye closed. But thank you, Kosh Baruch Hu, you gave me two eyes. I could see the world. Colors! Shapes! My family! Try to walk around a whole day with your eyes closed. Try to walk around with your eyes closed for half an hour. Try to walk around with your eyes closed for 5 minutes. You know what's going to happen? You're going to open your eyes to make sure you didn't go blind. Maybe I did go blind, so I have to open my eyes to make sure just a little. Oh, I'm okay. Ability to see, because Baruch Hu created a crazy world. And we're busy looking at this machine, and around us is the whole museum. And this is what we're doing all day, at a piece of metal. It has no feelings, it has no warmth, it has no smell. And this is what the whole world is doing. He won, the Satan won. We don't live in God's world. We live in Apple's world. We live in a metal world. He won. Watch the world. Nobody's been with their kids. Nobody's been with their wife. You see a husband and wife, they're sitting out, they went out to eat. Yay. They're both on their phones and they're not talking to each other. Used to go in a car. Used to sit in a car. Used to have a cassette and all these things. We used to listen to music. Nobody has it anymore. You put your phone in the car. You're doing business. You don't even see where you're going. We have no life. One of my Talmidim called me. This was about a year ago. He called me and all of a sudden I hear a toilet flushing. I'm like, Mayor, you're talking to me from the bathroom. Like, Rebbe, I usually put it on mute. You heard the flush? I'm like, you can't sit on the pot for like 5 minutes and relax. You go to a hotel. There's a phone in the bathroom. Give him a break. And it says in Shulchan that a person's supposed to sit on the bathroom for a little time to make sure that he's cleaned down and that he's healthy. In my office building in Borough Park, you go to the bathroom, every stall they're talking, the guys are all talking in the bathroom. I'm like, what's going on over here? I'm listening to the whole business going down in the bathroom. Hope they're not taking selfies. That's how crazy it is. That's how crazy. So your Rebbe wants your Rebbe, he just wants to take you out of that. He doesn't want to make you guys freaks like, oh my God, you don't have an iPhone? What do? You go to centers? What's wrong with you? That's the problem. That's going to be the problem. In this yeshiva, you all don't have phones, I hope, right? So you're in a community without phones. It's a lot easier. Once you go get on that plane, going back to America, and you know, you get back to your buddies in the car, and they're all doing it with their phone, and you're like, I have a Nebuch flip phone, right? You're going to be like, this guy, like, hiding it. You know, you might even have an iPhone that doesn't work, but at least it looks like it works, you know, whatever it is. That's when the pressure happens, man. That's when the men become men. That's when you become an individual. That's when you say, you guys do what you want, but I'm doing what I need to do. And you don't break. And you know what happens after that? Usually they follow you. Because our friends are all jealous. What do you mean you don't have a smartphone? How could you live without a smartphone? And you show them that you can, guess what happens? Not all of them are going to get off their smartphone because it's a big Yetzer Hara, but they will respect you. In the beginning, they will make fun of you. They will call you you're a cult, and this whole thing is ridiculous, and you're going to feel like I'm not cool, and I don't belong, and that's when you know you're doing the right thing. When you don't belong, it's when you're doing the right thing. And that's when the guys who are special stand out. And it's going to be really hard. It's very easy to give a speech in here. It's easy to get, not so easy, but it's easy to get $500 and to get, and I'm leaving and Pesach and I'm not that. And everybody in your family has one and you got to be on the family chat. If you're not on the family chat, we have to check out if you weren't adopted, because how can you not be on the family chat? You have to know what's going on in your family. Baruch Hashem, I have 15 grandchildren. Baruch Hashem, I'm not on the family chat. I think I know what's going on. You have to be on the friend chat. You have to be on the UI chat. You have to be in the Flatbush chat. You have to be on the shul chat. No, you have to be an individual. Kadosh Baruch Hu created us individuals. We all have different fingerprints. And those are the guys that make the difference. The rest of them become a school of fish. Just float along. How do you know a fish is alive? When it swims against the current. When it's going with the current, maybe it's dead and the current's taking it. When it swims against the current, that's when you know it's alive. When everybody's doing one thing and you're doing the right thing, then you know you're an individual, then you know you're somebody. And that's going to be the fight. That's the whole fight. I know everyone in this room is like, I can do this. But when you get there, it's going to be tough. Well, Rabbi Wallerstein has a flip phone, so you could tell him, hey, he has a flip phone, I can have a flip phone. Then they'll tell you, you're in his cult. You're not going to win. It's not going to work. You just got to do what you have to do. And you have to use that time, help kids, help people. Go help kids that have cancer, kids that are learning disabled. Help older people that think they're dying. They're in a nursing home, they're waiting to die. They have no life, their children don't come to visit them. Guys, you don't understand. The ability of a human being to help another human being is amazing. But you can't do it if you don't have time. So that's what's happening in the world right now. The world is falling apart. Since technology, the whole world is falling apart. It's so bad that I don't want to say because I'm on tape, but that communicating with Twitter. Get up and talk to us, you're the President of the United States. You're Twittering? What are you doing? So the guy from Korea, he's Twittering. So you got these two mishugam that are Twittering each other. How are they going to wipe out the whole world? It's normal? Normal not to get up and talk to the people? To Twitter? It's normal? It's not normal. But that's the norm. That's what happened. That's the norm. Guys send me good Shabbos. They send me a text, good Shabbos. I don't answer them. Pick up the phone, call your Rebbe, say good Shabbos. What is this text, good Shabbos? And the good Shabbos text goes out to 900 other people. So I'm not anything special. And then people send emails to invite. It's a new thing, RSVP, to go to a wedding. They send emails. I don't get emails. She goes like, why weren't you at my wedding? I'm like, why don't you send me an invitation? So I sent you an email. I don't get emails on my phone. Oh, I would have texted you. I'm like, what kind of invitation is that? Send an invitation. Let me write a card back. Hatzlacha and bracha. And anyway, how do they get their checks? Probably have to wire them money, you know, for the wedding. I have a friend right now. He's a funny guy. He's a clown. So he now writes checks by wedding. So you send $180 with the yes, but he post-dates it 5 years. So right now it's like February 1st, 2023. I said, why are you doing that? He says, well, you know, guys get married, then a year later they're divorced. So there goes my $180. Then she gets remarried. So I got to send her $180, and he gets remarried, and there's another $100. It's $540. I'm not doing that. So and then Chatzar Shalom can happen again, and it cost me $1,000. She said, you know what? Let them be married for 5 years, then put the check in. It's post-dated to that date. That's where we are. That's where we are today. Chatzar Shalom, none of you guys. It's a joke. He thinks he's funny, right? But it's not so funny. So. I want to talk to you 2 minutes about, I was in, I don't know if you can tell how my great tan. I guess you can't. So 2 weeks ago I was in Florida and I was standing by the beach by sunrise because I like to watch the world come from darkness to light. It's amazing. From when you see the top of the sun till it's up is maybe 2 minutes. It's amazing to watch a sunrise. And you boys should go once watch a sunrise. I'll tell you why. Sounds like, oh, romantic. Like, what? What do you go see? Sunrise? So I want to tell you about the first sunrise. Adam, so it was Erev Shabbos, and right before Ben Hashemashes, he did the Aver of eating from the tree. The next thing that happened after he did that, the sun began to set. He thought, says the Medrash, that he destroyed the world. The sun was out, he did an Avera, and now it's dark. So he cried a whole night. That he destroyed the world. Hashem's world was in darkness. He didn't see anything. The next morning, this is the first sunrise of the human being. The first sunrise of the human being was Shabbos morning. He was created on the sixth day. And all of a sudden, the sun starts rising. He's like, everything's here. Hashem was mechaper me. It wasn't destroyed. And he wrote Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos at sunrise, Shabbos morning. And that's the Mizmor Shir of Mashiach. That's the Mizmor Shir of Mashiach. We through Gaulus sinned, and we're going to realize Mashiach that we were forgiven, and that's very deep, the first sunrise of the human being, and he celebrated that by writing Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos. So I'm standing by the ocean, and the waves, I counted how many seconds between each wave. How many seconds do you think there are between each wave? Wave hits, next wave hits, how many seconds, guys? You can guess. Six. Oh, you were getting there. 6 seconds. Next wave. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wave. And I'm standing there. If anyone saw me, probably thought I was crazy, right? I'm standing there. I'm just watching these waves. And I'm talking to myself a little bit. What am I saying? So there's an unbelievable Zohar about waves. The Zohar says that when Hashem created the world, so first of all, let me ask you a question. I don't want to embarrass now. I'm not going to be unfair to you guys. But I do this in many schools. And I do this, actually, I did it last night with adults. I said, what day did Hashem create water? No days. Water was here before creation. What? Water was here before creation. What day did Hashem create earth? No days. Earth was here before creation. I didn't want to do that to you because most guys will scream second day. Everyone says the second day water was created. Totally wrong. Let's look at the pasuk. It was empty. And the ruach of Hashem was on top of the water. Was hovering above the water. So there was water before the first day. And then Hashem says, I'm going to take the water, separate it, right? And I'm going to separate the water from the earth. But the earth was there already. So we're not going to get into when that was created. Okay, we're not going to get into the whole Zohar on that. We're not going to get into when that was created. But before Sheshet Mei Maisa, water was here, the earth was here underneath the water. What did Hashem do? He separated, we had earth, we have water. 70% of the world is water. So it says that the water, naturally, every wave of water has a malach. Everything, every blade of grass, every wave of water has an angel. The water wants to take over the world and bring it back to the way it was before the sin, before creation. So every single wave, says the Zohar, wants to come into the world and cover the earth to take it back to the way it was. Everything comes back to its original source. So the malach of the wave that hits the sand, it gets pushed back out. It hits and it goes back. So the Zohar says, why doesn't he tell the malach coming in, I just try to drown the world? There's no way. There's a beach and there's sand and there's land and I just got pushed back. So you guys stop trying to take over the world. It's not happening. The Zohar says that every single wave that's going back out into the ocean tells the wave that's coming in, you're wasting your time. There's a beach. And we cannot take over earth. Says the Zohar. The wave coming in says back to the wave going out. Just because you couldn't do it doesn't mean I can't. Every 6 seconds, there's a malach that says, just because you couldn't get over the beach doesn't mean I shouldn't take a try. I think I could do it. Just because you can't doesn't mean I can. And the Zohar says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put that in the Bria for us. That just because some other guys have to have an iPhone doesn't mean that you have to have an iPhone. Just because your friends in America tried to get rid of it or tried to do whatever and they couldn't, remember the wave. It's in the Bria that I can do something that you can't do. And just because you failed doesn't mean I'm going to fail. And I'm standing by the ocean. Most people are swimming in the ocean. And I'm looking at these waves and I'm like, keep on coming, guys. Don't give up. If somebody, there was nobody out there. And it was 58 degrees and blowing like crazy. It was amazing. It was amazing to see the Bria of Hashem, every wave. And you know, they're like angry waves. Like, you know, like we're going to take over. There's this like anger. And then they just get pushed out. And then the next one comes in and they just get pushed out. And they're going to do this till Mashiach comes. And they do it every 6 seconds all over the world. Millions and trillions of malachim that are telling all the malachim, give it up, it ain't happening. And trillions and millions of malachim saying back, so you didn't do it? Okay, I can do it. Wow. It's in the Bria. And that's what you need to take to America. Just because all you other guys in the other schools, you can't give up your iPhone, that doesn't mean I can't give up my iPhone. That's something to learn from a wave. So I want to finish with the message of Tu B'Shvat that just happened. So everyone should understand their potential. So the question is, we celebrate Tu B'Shvat, it's such a big yontiv, that we don't say Tachna. Right? I'm sure you guys were very happy, you know? No Tachna. Tu B'Shvat. The Mincha before, no Tachna. Wow, we got out 2 minutes extra. I was very into cars. I am very into cars. I love fast cars. It's my Yetzirah. Everyone has the Yetzirah. Since I'm a little kid, that's my Yetzirah. So, I remember when I got the STSV, when it first came out. So, it went from 0 to 60 in like 3.4, something like that. Crazy thing. High speed, 180 miles an hour. The wheels were this wide. I got stopped on the Palisade, on the Garden State Parkway at 110. I just wanted to try it out to see how it went. And my mazel, he also wanted to try me out. The state trooper that pulled me over, I'll never forget, he pulled me over. He says, you know what you just did? You know how fast you were going? I'm like, 70? He goes, yeah, on two wheels with 70. I'll never forget it. I said, I just got this car, and you just touch the pedal, whatever it is. He goes, this is the new V, right? I'm like, yeah. He says, pop the hood. I knew I was good then. I knew I was good. I popped the hood. He looks at the engine and goes, wow. I never saw anything like this. He says, okay, it's a warning. So I'm like very, very crazy into fast cars. So Rabbi Miller, there's a story with Rabbi Miller that there was a guy that also was the same situation, whatever it is, and he was trying to explain to Rabbi Miller that it was like 400 horsepower, whatever it was, and Rabbi Miller said, okay, and so he goes, it only takes me to get to 60 miles an hour, it takes like 3.4 seconds to get there. So I save a regular car is like 7 seconds or 8 seconds. I save 4 seconds. Rabbi Miller looked at him and said, and what do you do with those 4 seconds? That's what counts. If you have a fast car and you save 4 seconds, what do you do with the 4 seconds? You use the 4 seconds? Otherwise, you don't need a fast car. Do you use the 4 seconds? And I was thinking to myself, yeah, so you had a fast car, so what? So you save 4 seconds. Anyway, where do you go with 0 to 60? You'll have 5 tickets. You try it on Ocean Parkway. It's not going to happen, right? But I was the kind of guy that, you know, and the guy said to me, even I was older, and he said to me, you know, this car is not really for you. You don't tell that to me anyway, but that's what the dealer said to me. He says, it's much cheaper. You get the regular STS. He says, you know, it has a top speed of 180 miles, and the tires, if they're flat, you can go at 80 miles an hour. And I'm like, yeah. And he says, you know, you live here in Brooklyn. You're like, where are you going to go 180 miles an hour? You know? And you know, 0 to 60, where are you going to do this? I said, you have to understand me. I'm never going to do 180 miles an hour. And I don't think I'm going to be flooring 0 to 60 either. But I want to know that if I want to do it, I could do it. That's a very important, not in cars, it's a very important thing in life. To set yourself up in a position that you got to do what you got to do and you'll be able to do it. You will not be able to live a normal life and give the attention to the world that you need to if you have a smartphone. It is impossible. It is impossible to have a smartphone and have WhatsApp and all the other things that are on that phone. It is impossible to give your learning and your davening and your relationships with your friends, your parents, whatever relationships that you have, is impossible if you live in that world. You are setting up yourself for the failure in your relationships. Because the relationship you're going to have is your phone. I have girls in my high school that, I had this girl that came running out of the bathroom a year ago, screaming at the top of her lungs, oh my God, I can't believe it. I thought, chas v'shalom, somebody went into the girl's bathroom and did something to her. The way she was screaming, I was like, and I'm like, calm down. I can't go into the girl's bathroom. Should I send a teacher to the girl? What happened to you? My phone. So when she said that, I already calmed down. I said, what happened? It fell into the toilet. I lost all my contacts. I don't know who my mother is anymore. You're laughing. She was serious. But in my high school, we have a Tchiyas HaMeisim room. Big bag of rice. You stick it in there. Baruch Mechaye Meisim. The panic. That her phone fell into it. I said, in Apple's world, right, in the smartphone world, that's the story of Noach. When the whole world was destroyed by water. Fell into the toilet, and that whole phone is finito. It's gone. I said, Hashem promised in his world, he won't do that again. So she was really freaked out because she didn't back up her phone. And now she lost, I don't know how many contacts, whatever it was. You'd really think that someone died in the toilet. Someone died in the bathroom. And she was screaming like hysterical. And Time Magazine writes, very interesting, the Goyim are also on this. Not just the Jews, the Goyim are on this. The waste of time and everything else and the addiction. It's an addiction because you can't live without it. And they were writing that for an adult, they asked, like, I don't know how many people, that if you go to work and you forgot your phone and you put your hand in your pocket and your phone's not there, what do you feel? And 90% of them said very, very disconnected and very, very insecure. You're in a building, everything, you don't have your, very insecure. So they said the iPhone is the adult's pacifier. How does a baby's pacifier work? It doesn't have any milk in it. It doesn't have any water in it. It's a piece of rubber, right? The baby's crying. The baby's screaming. You put the pacifier in the baby's mouth. It starts to suck. Shalom. There's nothing in there. It has no taste. Pacifiers don't have a taste, right? Because it gives it a sense of its mother, so it gives it a sense of security. So the psychologist, Time Magazine, brought down that the phone, right, even if it's not on, but you keep putting your hand in your pocket, and you're holding it, it's your tummy. It's your pacifier. So we got all these adults walking around with little pacifiers, and they feel secure, they have a phone. Instead of feeling secure in who they are and what they're doing and being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's where they are. And there are so many people today that come to shul, and you know, people freak out when the phone rings. I don't freak out. I'm like, it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah your phone can ring in shul. It says in halacha you can't talk in shul. So when two guys are talking in shul, nobody says anything. But that phone rings, oh my God. No! The guy forgot, okay? He's going to flip it off in 2 seconds. Calm down. But how many people daven with their phones in shul? And how many little kids, they don't know if these people are davening or if they're reading their texts. And there's no kedusha in a phone. If you drop it on the floor, you don't have to kiss it. Because the oishis are not real oishis. How do you know the oishis are not real oishis? Because if you're davening from your phone and it says Elokeinu, Hashem's name, right? And then you turn off your phone, you're erasing Hashem's name. How are you allowed to do that? So they paskin that since the letters are not real, it's not considered. So the oishis are not machkimois. So when you're learning on your phone, the oishis are not machkimois. You got to have the paper. You got to feel the paper. You got to daven. It's very bad to daven with a phone. You buy a wedding, whatever it is. When you go into shul, kids watch you, and kids don't know. I said, soon, it's not going to be long. No one's going to use siddurim at all. There's going to be a big screen in front of shul, and the davening will go. You'll see davening. You just read it. That's it. Everyone will look at the screen and read it. Then the shul can make money because you put ads, you put advertisements on it. Right before Goal Yisrael, do tshuva. Call 1-800 tshuva line. Right, it'll be amazing. I won't have to raise money anymore. That's where we're going. We're davening with them. We're benching with them. We're totally losing our sight on what it's all about. So my bracha to everyone here is that Yishtaka have the koyach and the foresight to be a nevuch. I always say stupid people have smartphones and smart people have stupid phones. You'll save your life. You'll become a different person. Play ball. Daven. Learn. Help kids. Go to nursing homes. Study. Gives you time. People ask me, Wallenstein, how do you do what you do in 24 hours? Baruch Hashem. I have Ornava, which is busy day and night. I have Ateres Nava, which is a seminary. I have BCA, which is a high school. I have the ranch at Bethel, which is a rehab. I, Baruch Hashem, have a business, plastic bag business. I have a family. I learn, I daven. How could you do that? Can't be. One person can't do that. Without a smartphone? Without emails? How could you do that? I'm like, that's the only way you could do it. That I don't have a smartphone, and I don't have a computer in my office. Yes, my secretaries have a computer. When they get an email, they put it on my desk, and I read it, and I write an answer, and they send it back. That's how I get emails. I don't have a computer in my office. There's no way the Yetzer Hara is going to get me to look at pictures that I should have, because I don't have them. And if the FBI came into my office and said, Wallenstein, we want to see all your emails. I'm like, check it out. It says, Shavisa Hashem LeNegdi Samad. You want to take that to the FBI org? No problem. You can check it out. I don't communicate that way. So how do I have time to do everything I do? Because I don't do anything else. I don't go to the movies. I don't watch television. Right? So someone said to me, hey, man, you ain't got no life. I'm like, no, hey, man, you ain't got no life. I got life. Because the whole day, I'm working with people. And I'm talking to them, and I'm helping them, and I'm spending time with them, which is the most important thing that a person can do. I got life. You don't got life. Your phone has life. That's it. And you got to recharge it every 20 minutes. And everyone in the airport, I was just in the airport, everyone's running around with their iPhone. I guess they die right away, right? And they're looking for plugs. They're all getting plugged in. Nebuch. People walking around, they're mishigas, they're crazy. And then they have batteries that they charge to charge. Apple's got us going, go all over the place. And then that battery dies, so you have to have another battery. So the guy comes onto the plane, he's got 6 batteries connected to each other, a backpack. But then they take it away from him because maybe it's a bomb and they're going to blow up the whole place, right? It's not, it's really, just watch. You don't need Rabbi Wallenstein. Just go out there when you're out there and just watch people on their phones. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You want to be connected? Disconnect. Again, I'm not talking to you about Yiddishkeit. That's a whole separate shir. And of course, it's a very important shemir. So now it's a very important shir. I'm talking about wasting time. It's the most important thing we have, boys. You're sitting in yeshiva and you're learning. You're going to go back to America. It's not the same. It's not the same. You're protected right here in this room. Out there, you're not protected. They're going to hit you with every... My daughter, I will not let my daughter go out with a boy who has a smartphone. Nope. Guy comes to the door. This kid has a smartphone. I'm not interested. If he has WhatsApp, have a good day. I won't even rent him a shidduch. What are you doing? You're a yeshiva boy. You're learning. What are you doing? Imagine you're single. You're busy with a phone. What's going to be when you're married and you have a business? Forget about it. So what am I simanim, right? I don't know your shidduchim, who you're going to go out with, but me, what am I simanim? I'm not letting a guy who has WhatsApp, who's on the internet, who has Facebook, go out with my daughter? No way. And I would not let my boys in yeshiva, my talmidim, and they all know it, go out with a girl who has Facebook. Because that person is already, before they're married, before they got a lot of stuff, right? They're already wasting time. You can't have a good relationship with your wife if you're busy on the phone. She needs your time. You can't have a good relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you don't give that relationship time. He gives you time. He gives you 24 hours in a day. But you can't have a relationship like that if you're on your phone. So I know it's very hard, and it's very easy when I'm speaking to you. It's very hard. It's even hard for me. People in business give me pressure. You know, Steve, my name is Steve, how am I going to get a hold of you if I need to get a hold of you? I'm like, send an email to my brother-in-law. He has an iPhone, right? He's the business guy. Like, one of my salesmen, she's like, if they ever find out in the big corporations that I sell that you don't have a computer, they're never going to do business with us. I'm like, girl, she's not a Jew. I said, the reason they're doing business with me is because God gave me as a customer. It has nothing to do with an iPhone. And it's very terrible today. I sell plastic bags. You can't, you want to make an appointment to see a buyer? There's no such thing. Send me an email. There's no relationship. So there's no relationship. So it's all about price. They don't care about anything else. They just look at a price. It's cold. The business today is cold. There's no feelings. There's no personal input. It's terrible. I hate it. I hate it to do business that way. Just a price. You're not a person. They don't know who you are. It doesn't make a difference. You don't want to be part of that world. You want to be part of the real world. So yeah, take the $500. I wouldn't even take the $500. I'd say, Rebbe, keep the $500. I don't need your $500. It's not what this is about. You're not buying my mitzvah, man. Rabbi, you're not buying my mitzvah for $500? Rebbe, nah. I don't need your $500. You want to sell my iPhone? Sell my iPhone and give the money to tzedakah. I don't need the money from that, and I don't need your money, Rebbe. Thank you for giving me my life back. And let me tell you, in a year from now, you'll come back and you'll say, you made me into someone special because I helped a kid, I helped an old lady, I helped my parents, I have better relationships with my parents. And if Nebuchadnezzar, your parents are busy on their phones, then you know what? Don't follow that. Do what you got to do. Be an individual. Because our parents are not in yeshiva. And our parents did not get an education. They came into this world, technology world, without a chinuch. You guys have a chinuch. They don't have a chinuch. This came when they're 40, 50 years old. They don't have a chinuch. So they don't have the chinuch to understand what it's doing to them. And let me tell you, divorces and shalom bias problems because of this phone and people they meet on this phone. And, you know, Facebook, you find people that you were in school with when you were very young. They say that, I think, 30% of Goyisha, there was also in Time magazine, because they're very busy with anti-the phone. The 30% of divorces, the divorce lawyers in America, 30% of divorces are based on Facebook. Because the Goyim, what they do is they were in public school and they had a girlfriend, right? And then they go to college and they never see them again. When you go to Facebook, you can find them. So this guy's middle-aged, and he finds his sweetheart that he had in high school, and he says, hey, how you doing? How's your life? And she's like, wow, I haven't heard from you since high school. And he's like, yeah, I have a wife and kids, and I'm miserable. And she goes, I have a husband and kids, and I'm miserable. Hey, maybe you want to meet for old time's sake. That's it. Have a good day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's destroying the world. Destroying everything. So Tu B'Shvat, I'm going to end with this. Tu B'Shvat is a very interesting holiday that we just had. You don't say Tachanun. Why don't you say Tachanun? What does the tree have to do with my sins? Shanu Baganu Gazali. No! Not saying it today. You know why? Happy New Year to the trees. We don't say Hallel. We don't say Hallel. We don't say Yalav Yavo. Why don't we say Tachanan? I know we're happy, but why don't we say Tachanan? The Teretz is amazing. The Teretz is as follows. It doesn't make sense, Tu B'Shvat, that it happens in Shvat. Shvat's in the middle of the winter. In New York right now, it snowed a little bit. People went outside, Tu B'Shvat. The trees are icicles. There are no leaves, there are no fruits, there are no flowers, they're dead. Walk out of the tree, you walk out of shul, you look at the tree, Happy New Year, tree! You look dead. Why don't we do Rosh Hashanah for trees in the spring? You make a bracha on the flower in Nisan. Captain, you should make Rosh Hashanah for trees. Or in the summer with an apple and a pear and a peach, right? Why do we Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is that the sap of the Esrik tree begins to come into the tree. But the Esrik tree itself looks dead. And the Teretz is, which is very important, the Jews, we celebrate potential. We don't celebrate the goal. Lo amalecha, it's not for you to finish the product. It's for you to try to start. And therefore, weddings, right? My friend sends it 5 years post-dated. Why do you spend so much on a wedding? Guy gets married to a girl, $100,000, $50,000, flowers, 10-piece band, Schwecki for 20 grand. We got this guy freed. We spent all this money, all these flowers, 5 dishes, a crazy smorgasbord, right? 800 guys, 200 friends. I'm talking about American weddings. Maybe it's not going to work. Maybe these two are going to get divorced after 3 months. You're spending $100,000 on a maybe? This is what I think we should do. 60th anniversary. They got children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. They're actually still looking at each other after 60 years. That's when you make the wedding. That's when you make the big party. 1,000 people come to see a couple that was able to live together for 60 years. So we're celebrating what they did. Why take a chance on 100 grand that maybe it won't work? And the Teretz is, we're spending money on the potential of this couple. The couple that's married 60 years, okay, maybe Hashem will give them another 20. That's going to be, they'll each be 100 years old at that point. But the potential of the young couple is another 80 years. So the potential of the young couple is huge. Potential of the 60-year-olds, anyway, they wouldn't hear the music. They won't taste the food anyway. But the flowers smell too much, too loud. Wouldn't work anyway. We celebrate potential. Tu B'Shvat. The potential of the tree begins by the sap going into the roots. And therefore, we celebrate the potential of a tree that looks dead. Because the fruit that we're eating today on Tu B'Shvat is the fruit from that tree that last year at this time looks dead. Look! Look what came from the potential. Look at all these fruits that I'm eating. That's the celebration. And therefore you don't say Tachanun. Because Tachanun is about doing Averis. That's no potential. There's no potential there. So on the day where I'm saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I look dead. I look like, look at me. I look like a tree without leaves. I'm going through all these. I do all these Averis. And I do what I'm not supposed to do. And I look like a tree that has no leaves and no fruit, nothing. But Hashem, look at my potential. Then you're going to start saying, Hashem no Bagano, I sinned yesterday. I did a sin yesterday. No, we're looking forward at my potential. And therefore, the one thing you don't say on Tu B'Shvat is Tachanun. We're not talking about our Averis. We're talking about our future. And every single person in this room needs to know that no matter what you look like, no matter what you think you look like, or no matter what you look like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu celebrates potential. And that's what the Yontif of Tu B'Shvat, which just passed us. And even though many of Klal Yisrael, they taco look dead, you know, you go out there and you see some kids, man, let me tell you, they don't look like they're ever going to have leaves, and they don't look like they're ever going to have fruit. But you should know that they have an neshama. And if they have an neshama, they have the potential that this year, the tree that looks dead in my block on Avenue, on East 23rd, I'm not giving you the avenue because then you'll come visit me, but on East 23rd, you go out there, the tree looks dead, and I'm like, you look dead now, but I'll see you in 3 months. You're going to have leaves, I have a cherry tree. You're going to have cherries. I know what you got. You look dead, but I know what's going on underneath there. That's how you have to look at Klai Yisrael. That's how you have to look at every kid. No matter what you look like, but I know what you got. I know that you have a neshama. Rabbi Greenwald, I don't know how many of you knew Ronnie Greenwald. I'll end with this. I said that four times. Usually the fourth time I end. So I was very close to Ronnie Greenwald. He was unbelievable mechanech. He was an unbelievable person. He had Camp Sternberg. And he was the head of my school, my high school. So the first time I met him for the high school, I said, tell me a good story. Something that you did in chinuch. This is what he told me. He said there was a girl that was thrown out of a Beis Yaakov. I'm not going to say which Beis Yaakov. She did something really bad. She got thrown out of a Beis Yaakov. And the Rebbetzin said she's not taking her back. So they had these people, they tried everything. They had people with people on the board. Rebbetzin said no. They had people with money. Rebbetzin said no. They had rabbis, big Gedolim called for these people. Gedolim from Eretz Yisrael. She said, I can't take her back. So the last guy to ask was Ronnie Greenwald. So the parents went to Ronnie Greenwald and said, please do something. Get my kid into school. So he calls up the Rebbetzin. He says, Rebbetzin, I need to meet with you. And the Rebbetzin says, if it's about this girl, Ronnie, I don't want to meet with you. There's nothing to talk about. Ronnie said, what girl? I don't want to talk about that girl. I want to ask you a question. Oh, okay. He comes into school. He's brilliant. He sits down in front of the Rebbetzin. He says, I want to ask you something. Would you ever throw, if like a grandmother, an old lady, an Alta Babuchka, he said, came to your school, an old lady, an old grandmother, would you ever throw such a woman out of your building? That's a silly question. Why would I throw a grandmother out of my building? So he looks at the Rebbetzin and he says, well, you just did. She said, there was an old lady in my building today. He said, you know that girl? Oh, no. You said you weren't going to talk about that girl. He said, I'm not talking about that girl. I'm talking about her grandchildren. You throw her out of this school, she's going to go off to Derech. You're going to affect her children and her grandchildren. And she's going to have grandchildren. So right now, even though she looks like a 16-year-old girl, she is a grandmother. She's an Alta Babuchka. And you just threw a grandmother out of your school. She said, that's not fair. He said, but it's true. You're looking at a girl. I'm looking at a grandmother. So she said, okay, Ronnie, you guarantee me that she won't misbehave, and you guarantee me that she will have frum children and frum grandchildren, and she'll talk and be a frum grandmother? You give me that guarantee, I'll take her back. And she took her back. The ability to look at a tree that looks dead and understand that it's really alive. And that's what every one of you guys need to do. No matter how much you're struggling, and no matter what you go through in life, you need to know that you're not a guy. You're not Meir or Yehuda or Aaron in rabbi school. You're a Zaydi. You're a Tati. And that's how you have to look at your life. And what you're doing right now at 18, 19, 17, 18, 19, 20, what you're doing right now is going to have an effect. And you're going to hurt the Zaydi if you do the wrong things. And you're going to help the Zaydi if you do the right things. I told you I wouldn't tell you another story. I don't know who the Rosh Yeshiva is. I know it's not Rabbi Center, for sure. But in Aleinu Shabeach, he writes a story. They say he's a gadol today. I don't know who he is, but there was a boy in a yeshiva in Bnei Brak. I don't know which yeshiva, but he was a crazy troublemaker. He did like crazy things. And one day, Rosh Yeshiva walks into the Beis Medrash like this, and all the guys are laughing. And he hears someone kicking in the Aron HaKodesh. It's a famous story. So he figures that there's a kid in the Aron HaKodesh. So he opens up the Aron HaKodesh, and out jumps a goat. The true story. In the middle of Bnei Barak, a goat jumps out of the Aron HaKodesh. Right away, yeshiva knew, there's only one guy who put a goat in the this boy. So they call the boy into the, and they say, out! Goodbye, you're done. A goat? So he says, you can't throw me out unless you take me to Bezdin. Bezdin has to paskin, because if you throw me out of yeshiva, I will not keep Shabbos, I will not keep anything, is Dinei Nefashos, and for Dinei Nefashos, you have to go to a Bezin. He said, you want to go to Bezin? We'll take you to Bezin. So they go to the Bezin of Bnei Brak, and the Bezin says, what do we have here? Rosh Yeshiva said, this is this boy, he's in my yeshiva, he put a goat in the Aron HaKadosh. In front of the whole yeshiva, the yeshiva opened it up and almost jumped on him. So they turn to the boy, and they're like, and we're throwing him out. So they turn to the boy, and they're like, what do you have to say for yourself? Brilliant. He says to them, listen, you can't throw me out. Why can't we throw you out? Because the halacha is that the Teveya and the Nitva have to be in front of Bezin. The guy who has the claim and the guy you're claiming against has to be in front of Bezin. If you throw me out of yeshiva, you're not only destroying me, you're destroying my children and my grandchildren. And being that my children and my grandchildren are not in Bezin, because they're not here yet, so you can't be Machai of me. That's what he told them. Brilliant. He's a brilliant boy. So Bezin looks at Rosh Yeshiva and says, "This, I think you should keep him. He might be a gadol one day with that head." And he writes in Aleinu Shabbat that today he is one of our biggest gadolim. And he doesn't write who it is. Someone told me a name. I didn't really recognize the name, whatever it is. He says, well, it's not Reb Chaim. He didn't put a goat in the bed. But it is a gadol. And that was his taina. His taina was, it's not me, my kids and my grandchildren. The best thing that all of you can do for your children and Emet Hashem, your grandchildren, is not to have a smartphone. It's to listen to your Rosh Yeshiva. Because it's not for you. It's for your Dorei Dorois. And a family that doesn't have smartphones and technology and computers brings up a different family and brings up a different kid. So if you can't do it for yourself and your friends are making fun of you, like, what are you doing? Why don't you have an iPhone? Tell them, I'm doing this for my grandchildren. I'm doing this for my great-grandchildren. I'm doing this for my wife. I'm doing this for my children. And they'll be like, hey, man, when'd you get married? At 13? Like, you know, you got kids? The answer is no. Ezehu chacham haroyas hanayla. The ability to look at a tree that looks dead and understand that one day it's going to give fruit. A person is compared to a tree. All of you are compared to trees. Mitzvah Hashem, my bracha to you is that you should bear fruit for many, 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 many years. And you should have an understanding when you see kids that are suffering and kids that are off the derech. Just know that maybe right now they look dead, but every single neshama, and that's what we learn from Tu B'Shvat, every single neshama has something going on. And if you give it time and the right taken care of, you'll taka be zoicha to see the fruits. May we all be zoicha be'ezrat Hashem to have the koyach, to stand up and to be an individual. I'm standing in front of you because I am an example. So I'm not telling you to do something. I'm an example. I have a very full life, and I'm very, very busy, and I don't text. It takes me, I have text on my phone, on my flip phone, but it takes me 40 minutes to write the word and. So, because I got to go through all three letters. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to call the person. I'm just not going to text them. I'm going to call the person. You'll find life. Hashem should give you arichas yamim v'shanim, all of you. You should have a lot of time to use it correctly, and what your Rosh Yeshiva is doing, there's no other yeshiva that I know of that came up and said, I'll give you $500 to keep your phone. It's that important. If it's that important, how many boys are in yeshiva? How many boys are in yeshiva? Rosh Yeshiva? 100? That's $50,000. $50,000 when a yeshiva who doesn't have money. The yeshiva is saying, guys, I'll put $50,000 on the table that you guys should be okay. That's amazing. That's unbelievable. And you're going to have to answer. Your yeshiva put you at spot because after 120 years, Hashem's going to say, your yeshiva offered you $500 and you still didn't do it. No other guy's going to have to answer to that. You should all be zeicha that be able to come back my next time to speak, which will be Lag BaOmer, which is after Pesach, that everyone in this room can say, Rabbi Wallerstein, we went home Pesach, no smartphones. Rabbi Wallerstein, we made the deal. You got to do it. Do it for yourself. Do it for your children. Do it for your grandchildren. Bezrat Hashem, I have a lot of hope that you'll be able to be individuals. You should have a tzlacha and bracha. Thank you.
I tried my hardest.
What?
Sure, put it in.
All right, boys, make it happen. Be individual. Your friends will follow you. Be good, be good. 50,000. Thank you. Keep steiging, guys. This is the place. This is where it's at. Hey, that one's good. Here's the way to see.